Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail?
Country. Let's keep it that way and welcome those people who come here to become American citizens, who come here to contribute, not corrupt, co-opt, or bring foreign ideologies here like communism. Interesting day today, events in history. Well, let's go with the birthdays, very important birthdays. The guy who invented the Doppler effect, Christian Doppler, 1803, he was born today. Very important social reformer, a Harvard lawyer, a good one, an honest one, an ethical one. Wendell Phillips, who believed in women's suffrage, worked for that. He was a philanthropist, an orator, a politician, and he also did something unusual. He suggested to President Andrew Johnson, who succeeded Abraham Lincoln, that Johnson create a cabinet-level post to promote and protect equal rights for Native American Indians. There's an interesting contrast with Colonel John Chimington in the Sand Creek, Colorado massacre, which became a movie, Soldier Blue, with Candace Bergen and Peter Strauss, which relates to it's an interesting contrast between these two men and this this event that happened in 1864. When Colorado was still a territory and a wild one. And today, among the writers who were born today, and this is also interesting with the deaths, C.S. Lewis, the writer who was born today, and he, those of you who like the Screwtape Letters and the Chronicles of Narnia, he was a great writer and scholar. And another newsman with a great radio voice, and a lot of, if you notice, the accents of our, used to be of our media people, with few exceptions, with David Brinkley, who was a gentleman, I think, from North Carolina, but a very rich bass baritone. Most of, in the past, and I forgot Frank Newman, I think was from Newman, who was also a linguist, or grammatician, I think it was from New York, or from the Midwest, and then of course Cronkite, who modified his accent, was from Texas. But Frank Reynolds, who used to be the before this guy from Canada came in, was the night anchor for ABC News, and he was born in 1928. I used to watch him. Very good-looking fellow, very very personable. And he was from the Midwest, as the guy Tom Brokaw is from Nebraska. Chet Huntley, I think, is from Wyoming, or from the West. But a lot of our better anchors with those nice, rich, flat, common American voices. I don't use the word common in a derogatory sense, but it would differentiate from somebody who was from, say, Maine, or down in the really deep backwoods of the American South. And then I knew this gentleman. He sent me. I interviewed him at the Democratic Convention in 1984, Paul Simon, who was a publisher and also a U.S. senator. Also, we had another publisher, Canadian, George Brown, who published the biggest Canadian paper called the Toronto Globe, and that dated back to 1818. And then those of us who love opera music, Giacomo Puccini was born today. And his great unfinished opera, probably the most Wagnerian, those of you who love opera, would be Turandot, which is one of my favorites. And he was quite a womanizer, and but a great musician, great composer. And then this is a controversial person. She's left-wing Catholics have venerated and canonized this woman. She was, this is her death. She died today. Dorothy Day, was in pre-love, two pre-love relationships, had a daughter. She also was involved with Peter Kropotkin, who was an anarchist communist, and she got cooked into the Catholic Worker Program. I used to think she was a great lady, and now I'm getting to have some doubts that I have looked into her biography and her background. She's dead now. And they named a HUD housing project here after her here in San Francisco. And then Natalie Wood, Russian-Jewish family, married to Robert Wagner, was on that boat. There was something that happened. It was supposed to be a sexual tete-a-tete. She saw it and either was shocked and fell overboard or was pushed overboard. This is one of the big mysteries. She was only 43, good-looking woman, had a great future still ahead of her, or she was in the middle of her career anyway. And then Cary Grant died today. He was born Archie Leach in England and came to America, never lost. Now, here's the guy who never lost his accent. He modified it. But what was interesting, he said he when he got money, he spent it on the best clothes, even if it was his only best pair of shoes or a suit, and that made the impression on people. And then Ralph Bellamy died today. You probably remember him in the film Sunrise at Campobello, which was the midlife of FDR when he caught polio. So these are the interesting deaths. And now among the interesting events today, this has been made into what is called the 50 Famous Pieces in music, the 1812 Overture, and in this date in 1812, Napoleon began his retreat from Russia. And then in 1864, getting back to the contrast between Colonel John Chivington, who started this horrible massacre and atrocity at Sand Creek, Colorado, when it was still a territory. He hated Indians, and what happened was this was depicted very accurately in the movie Soldier Blue, with Candace Bergen and Peter Strauss, it was called the Colorado Volunteers, and what they did was they were a group of Coloradans who fought and defeated the Confederates who were trying to take over New Mexico. And he hated Indians. Ironically, this guy was an abolitionist and a Methodist minister from Ohio. And on this date in 1864, because of all the conflict between the Indians, the Arapaho, the Lakota, and the Cheyenne, he entered this village with cannon, and the Indians saw him coming, and they had the American flag. They were trying to stand on their treaty rights or agreements, and the soldiers were either drunk or the Colorado Volunteers, like a National Guard militia. They gave militia a bad name, and they just not only shot down innocent, all these unarmed women, children, and the chief, they did horrible atrocities that we used to see in history with marauding bands of the Huns and savages. They ripped out the fetuses from women, cut off their genitals, and they used them as trophies. They cut off the testicles of the chief and used it as a tobacco pouch. Horrible, horrible things that these guys did. And the story was suppressed for a long time, and it finally came out. And this guy Chivington, this was his attitude, and this is a Methodist minister. Get this, damn, Any man who sympathizes with Indians, I have come to kill Indians, and I believe it is the right and honorable thing to do under God's heaven earth to kill Indians. And you contrast him with Wendell Phillips, who was arguing with Andrew Johnson and other people in Congress and in the federal government to do something to protect equal rights for Native American Indians. Also at this period, Massachusetts, the court there ordered the various pastors to learn the dialects of the Indians in the local in their local communities, so that they know this is a questionable objective, so that they could teach them Christianity. So it's again, it wasn't only Father Sarah who was imposing Roman Catholicism on California Indians. All these religions did it, especially here in the United States. And now, this is another interesting date that ties in with Pearl Harbor 1941, December 7th. In 1887, the U.S. received the right to own Pearl Harbor, and of course, 44 years later, the Japanese caught most of our fleet. The aircraft carriers were out, thank God. And inflicted a lot of damage on that Sunday. And for those of you who like to hoist a few, if you were in Pennsylvania in 1933 after Prohibition, because that was one of the abolition of Prohibition was one of FDR's campaign promises, which he kept and which helped get him elected. Pennsylvania was the first state to open state-owned liquor, state-owned and controlled liquor stores. Canada had these. I think some of the other states have them, and down south. And then 1945, Yugoslavia became a republic. They used to be a monarchy, King Peter, and there was one of their kings was assassinated in Paris. I think it was King Alexander during the 30s. But Yugoslavia was what was the amalgamation in the Balkans of what Serbia, Croatia, Montenegro. And what's the other one? Not the Chetans, but anyway, Tito, the communist, he changed his name. He was the communist guerrilla who fought the Nazis successfully. He became the president of communist president of Tito of Yugoslavia, and he defied Stalin and got away with it. And he said he was going to pursue his own brand of communism, and he kept all of those Yugoslavs under control. But when he died, the place started to break up, and again the fights among the various, so we can call them tribes, or the regions started again. And it was Churchill who recognized this fact a long time ago about the Yugoslavia and the Balkans. He said, there's always trouble in those damn Balkans. Yet, during World War II, instead of, he was opposed to invading Europe from Normandy and said we should go and strike through Yugoslavia, what he called the soft underbelly of Europe. Unfortunately, and Patton would have been just the general to do it. Unfortunately, he didn't follow his advice. And then 1947, this is relevant today, the United Nations partitioned Palestine, which is now Israel today, partitioned it between the Arabs and the Jews, who became Israelis because the country became Israel. And the fights, as you know, are still going on today. The conflicts are still going on today. And this cost, they sent over a Swede, Count Folke Bernadotte, who descended from the French General Marshal Jean Bernadotte, who became the King of Sweden. He was off the crown because the king back in 1812 era did not have any male heirs, and Jean Bernadotte was one of Napoleon's best generals. But he became disillusioned with what he saw as Napoleon's megalomania. Now, there's a famous film starring Marlon Brando, who plays a young Napoleon, and Gene Simmons. It's called Desiree, and Michael Rennie plays Jean Bernadotte. You might want to check that out if you're a film buff. As I always said, art is true to life. And then, let's see. Oh, yes, in 1951, the first underground nuclear test explosion occurred in Frenchman Flat, Nevada, and it's still a problem today. There are military personnel who were drafted back then who had to be at these test sites, both Navy out at the Bikini Atoll, and the Army draftees who were out in Nevada, and it's places like Frenchman Flat, and they have never been fully compensated or even compensated for what they claim are the injuries they received while in the military service. Now, there is a controversial U.S. Supreme Court case, which Captain Vincent Averna always brings up, that it's called Solario, S-O-L-A-R-I-O. It's one of the cases I had to research for Stephen Neri, the U.S. Navy sailor. And it's what it is that any injuries that are occurred while you're on military in military service, you can't sue the government. Now, there are people like Art Burnclaw who's trying to get this Supreme Court ruling overturned, or not overturned, only the Supreme Court can overrule itself, but get Congress to rewrite the law. And so far he's been unsuccessful, but he's still going at it because there are servicemen who should have gotten compensation for the injuries that they did suffer while serving our country and protecting us. And then in 1952, General Eisenhower, who was running for president on a Republican ticket, one of his campaign promises was, I will go to Korea to assess the situation. You want to get us out of Korea because it's the forgotten war and we weren't winning and it's still a problem today. And I don't know. I don't see Mr. O saying, I will go to Afghanistan or I will go to Iraq or Iran. So that's interesting. And then in 1963, we had this was the week in 1963, November 22nd, the assassination of John Kennedy. It was a week of mourning, and the Warren Commission, Chief Justice Earl Warren, who was former governor of California, also the vice presidential candidate on the Republican ticket in 1948. And Ike appointed him to the Chief Justice of seat on the U.S. Supreme Court. He succeeded Fred Vinson, who we have the same birthday, interestingly, or day, not date. Anyway, Vinson is famous. He came from Kentucky, and I think the federal judge is also a U.S. Navy graduate. Judge Vinson down in Florida in the federal courts is ruling, he has before him, the case where the state attorney generals are opposing Obamacare. And I think this Vinson down there is related to the late Chief Justice Frederick Vinson. Vinson was also the only Chief Justice to have served in all three branches of government. Only William Howard Taft came close. He was Governor General of the Philippines, and he was President and Chief Justice, but he was never in the legislature. And let's see, today we have, there are a lot of questions about media people. They have, there's no oversight organization. When a media person lies, distorts, omits, takes bribes, there's no organization like, say, the medical board that oversees malpractice and doctor medical misconduct of doctors. There's no like a bar association, although the bars are becoming just as bad to oversee and to disbar corrupt lawyers or lawyers who are incompetent or who steal clients' money. But there's nothing like that for journalists or people who call themselves journalists. But here is the farewell. It's a memorial to Eric Sebright, who died this week. And he was one of the great journalists, a real journalist. I mean, the guy did his work. He wasn't biased. He did commentary for CBS when CBS was the premier broadcast network. And NBC was chasing them. They came very close with some of the people they had. And then it became neck and neck. But anyway, you don't see people like Ed Murrow, even Walter Cronkite, Robert Trout, Ed Murrow, Charles Collingwood. These were people with great voices. I mean, they were erudite. They weren't involved in crotch politics. Whatever their private life was, they kept it private. And they didn't whore around with politicians like we see today. So I call these people media morons. Who do this. There are still some people out there trying to be real journalists, but I think that this every aspiring journalism student should listen to this commentary from Eric Sebright.
By my time of life, one has accumulated more allegiances and moral debts than the mind can remember or the heart contain. So I cannot enumerate my betters, my mentors, and sustainers during so many years of trying to use with sense this communications instrument, as unperfected as the persons who use it. But they know that I know who they are. Many are gone, including the man who invented me, Ed Murrow. Some died in the wars we were reporting. I've gone the normal span of a man's working life, rather abnormal in this calling, and it's a happy surprise. We were like a young band of brothers in those early radio days with Murrow. If my affections are not easily given, neither are they easily withdrawn. I have remained through it all with CBS News, and if it is regarded as old-fashioned to feel loyally to an organization, so be it. Mine has been here an unelected, unlicensed, uncodified office and function. The rules are self-imposed. These were a few. Not to underestimate the intelligence of the audience and not to overestimate its information. To elucidate when one can, more than to advocate. To remember always that the public is only people and people only persons, no two alike. To retain the courage of one's doubts as well as one's convictions in this world of dangerously passionate certainties. To comfort oneself in times of error with the knowledge that the saving grace of the press, print, or broadcast is its self-correcting nature. And to remember that ignorant and biased reporting has its counterpart in ignorant and biased reading and listening. We do not speak into an intellectual or emotional void. One's influence cannot be measured. History provides for the journalist no markers or milestones, but he is allowed to take his memories. And one can understand as he looks back the purpose of the effort and why it must be done. A friend and teacher, the late Walter Lippmann, described the role of the professional reporter and observer of the news in this manner. "We make it our business," he said, "to find out what is going on under the surface and beyond the horizon, to infer, to deduce, to imagine, and to guess what is going on inside, and what this meant yesterday and what it could mean tomorrow. In this way, we do what every sovereign citizen is supposed to do, but has not the time or the interest to do it for himself. This is our job. It is no mean calling, and we have a right to be proud of it and to be glad that it is our work." In the end, of course, it is not one's employers or colleagues that sustain one quite so much as the listening public, when it be so minded. And I have found that it applies only one consistent test, not agreement with one on substance, but the perception of honesty and fair intent. There is in the American people a tough, undiminished instinct for what is fair. Rightly or wrongly, I have the feeling that I have passed that test. I shall wear this like a medal. Millions have listened intently and indifferently, in agreement and in powerful disagreement. Tens of thousands have written their thoughts to me. I will feel always that I stand in their midst. This was Eric Severide in Washington. Thank you and goodbye.
He died shortly after that, and I think Walter Cronkite gave the memorial on CBS News later that week. But this was one of the, not only did he have a great voice, very impressive looking man, the beautiful steel gray hair. I think he interviewed one person that I reassessed, Eric Hoffer, the longshoreman who was blind, overcame that, became a longshoreman and a writer, a scholar, and wrote The True Believer, which is a book that everybody should read. And then, of course, I am continually pushing Jack Cashel's book. He's working on another one, I think. But anyway, California is on the brink of a major political and economic disaster, in our opinion. This election that's just gone down, they claim it was an honest election, but even the media, some people who are trying to be real media people, journalists, have reported vote fraud here in San Francisco, at least two instances of it. And there's questions about the L.A. County Registrar who came from someplace else where he committed. There's questions about his conduct in that office as involving voter registration, voter certification, election certification. So we are not convinced, and we've seen too much of voter fraud. And, you know, as Stalin said, it's not who votes, it's who counts the votes. So this still prevails in this totalitarian-minded political machine that we have operating out here on the West Coast. So ignorance is not bliss. What you don't know can hurt, harm, and cost you, and will. We want to bring up this issue, not an issue, but here's a thought. Does music reflect political agenda and political sentiment? So this is also kind of a fun piece of music, and it was in our archives. All our stuff comes out of archives, Western Public Radio, KALW, Verzola Carson Archives. We've got over several thousand recordings and interviews and stuff we've done over the years, and stuff that I got from my mother. Where is it? Where is it? Yeah, here we go. Gotten over that Thanksgiving turkey and pumpkin pie and dressing and cranberry sauce, and hope that you'll be able to afford a Christmas and New Year's dinner. If you have a little extra, give it to somebody who needs it. Peter Paul Brizola, thank you for listening.